Welcome to the latest episode of The Grower and The Economist. I'm Michelle Klieger, The Economist.
And I'm Peter Kanjoyan, The Grower.
Each week, we team up to tackle the biggest challenges facing small and medium-sized growers. We're one part grower and one part economist, just like your business. Welcome to this episode of The Grower and The Economist. Peter and I are excited to be joined by Andrew Brooks of Priva. He's the business development manager for the Southeast, and we're excited to have you. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank y'all. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you got to be the business development manager of Priva and sort of your journey here?
I was able to get in this role primarily, at the time I was with a large GC group called Arco Murray. And for those not familiar with Arco Murray, if you go to any top golf in the United States, England, and Canada, they build those. Not only do they build top golfs, they have multiple disciplines, including being the largest design build industrial builder in the United States market by volume. And I was on their control environment ag team in Chicago. I worked under Patrick Hyder and Gary Weiss. The focus was cannabis design build. That was encompassing of, end-to-end building solutions, one point of contact, managing the entire construction phase. My job there was to really break those introductions with the operators, C-levels, the growers, develop and manage those relationships, and get to the point where we had a discussion about, what the operation needed to accomplish. Long story short, I meet a few guys that work on Priva systems. And for those that aren't familiar, Priva, we are the global leader in process controls and automation for horticulture. So with a group of guys out in California I developed a good relationship with, we noticed they had Priva controls, unlike the other controls that at the time Arco I was really engaged with. I saw that with the Priva side, there was an emphasis on horticulture. The algorithm itself was designed for growing crops within a tenth of a degree and managing those environments end to end, let's call it. Now, I live in Florida, and I deal with a lot of our existing clientele, U.S.-based food creation ornamentals, but also working with a network of partners on international development, as in Dutch, Canadian building down here, as well as meeting the efforts with domestic opportunities as well, not only on the commercial side, which is obviously our main focus, but also educating the market.
Excellent. Andrew, thank you for taking time to join us today. Michelle's going to have her questions and her angle. The angle that I'd like to come at this from, and I'd like to engage in a quick discussion with you. I've been in greenhouses my entire life and career, and I'm very familiar with the name Priva. Michelle and I gear this podcast, Andrew, more to small and medium-sized greenhouse operations and farms. So my questions are going to come to you from Priva is a global leader. I'm assuming your experience when you talk about multi-state operations is more on the larger scale of our industry. So I'm going to ask you during the course of our conversation to kind of define what state of the art is from Priva's perspective. And then, Andrew, I want to push a little further and say to you, okay, how can we apply some of this technology or knowledge that you just referenced aimed at smaller growers? Because tell me if I'm right or wrong, Andrew, as a small greenhouse operator, Priva system, in my mind, was beyond my means, and I was not a large enough production facility to be able to justify the investment. So let's start there, and I'll give you an opportunity. You respond and react. If my perception of any of this is inaccurate, please point it out to me.
A lot of times in horticulture, and let's define horticulture for the sake of this discussion for ornamental floriculture. Let's look at food creation. The major crops in the market right now that are really leading the charge, and those that have been leading the charge have been being the tomato crops. And then now we're seeing an expansion of the leafy varieties through multiple different operations in the U.S. and Canada. And to kind of level set for those who are unfamiliar with horticulture, greenhouse production, vertical farming, Priva, our allies in our network, We like to kind of say that vertical farming and high-tech greenhouse production are, you know, focused on precision, right? And for Priva, when we look at the production methodology over the last, I don't know, let's say 30, 40 years, it's been based on, you know, controlling the five main elements in the greenhouse. So it's going to be CO2, light, temperature, humidity, nutrient uptake. And for those situations in high-tech, state-of-the-art, I'm looking at that as you're in glass, using steel, you have multiple, you know, good example is going to be in Holland or in Leamington, Ontario, for those who aren't familiar with the Leamington market. That's where the vast majority of production for a lot of vegetables in the U.S. it comes from, right? So when we think of Sunset, we think of Mucci Farms, we think of, you know, the cherry tomato varieties, the lettuces, varieties, and things like that. That's being grown in Leamington, and that is where you'll find a lot of the state-of-the-art. State-of-the-art being...
So, and Andrew, let me jump... I'm going to jump in just for a second because...
Sure.
And Michelle, when you and I talk about technology and small, medium-sized operations, here, I think this is one of the perfect comparisons in the scaling. The state of art that Andrew's talking about is controlling a greenhouse temperature to a tenth of a degree. Andrew, for my work in small and medium-sized operations, we're more on, can we control it to a degree, you know, a full
sure.
degree. And I think that's a fascinating dynamic, and it's something that I would advise small growers to listen to you, listen to Priva, be aware of where you guys are going, because what sure. you're doing today with a tenth of a degree is probably 5 years off for a small operator.
I would, you know, Peter, it's so great you bring that point up because, you know, a lot of the small and medium farmers that we're having discussions with are indeed looking for opportunities to go from field to table. My vision of CEA is to add value. My vision of CEA is to add value to already existing operations that have, let's say, 2,500 acres of land, but maybe we want to parcel off 300 acres for 20-acre greenhouse for production. The main things are being, you know, the need for a better harmony between water conservation, ag, and people. You should be able to get local produce within 50 kilometers, right? We should not have to continue to lean on produce being trucked in from Yuma, Arizona, or brought in from Mexico and Canada to fill our shelves. We should be able to do it ourselves. And so I believe, you know, for Priva, for our allies, for the market, the small to medium farms are a major component to our future.
Andrew, you hit on something that I think is a really firm common ground for all of us. Michelle, you and I have a recurring conversation about, Andrew mentioned Yuma, Arizona, and that centralized food system. Andrew, for our time with this podcast, Michelle and I have both been asking the question in different ways, how much of our industrial agriculture can we return to the family farm? I think with the discussion with you today, the family farm can be very large in private world, and it can be very small, as in the Pennsylvania diversification that you referenced a minute or so ago. I'm going to ask you one last question and then let Michelle come in from her economics perspective. My last question would be, when you're on a panel discussion or you're at a conference giving a presentation or even in a trade show, Andrew, how do you respond if you get a small grower or group of small growers that come to you and say, this is much more than I am ready to tackle. This is beyond my financial means, but what do you want me to pay attention to? What should I be looking to do as a small greenhouse operator? And how might I be working with Priva as the years unfold? Is that a clear question that I'm asking you?
I think it is. And, you know, I don't really know how much better you can ask those kinds of questions, because a lot of times when we're asked similar things, myself, my fellow colleagues in Holland, many times we're going to say, we don't know yet. You know, for a smaller farmer that's looking at Priva, looking at, you know, there might be a situation where, you know, we're not able to financially, you know, get into this. But there are things coming down the pipeline, I would say, to be aware of. I mean, obviously, you have some initiatives being led out of the USDA. Specifically, what I do, focusing a lot with the land grants, who already have these relationships with the small farmers to begin with. There's a lot of R&D that we're doing concurrently with these universities, and they're following our model because, again, they want to train their students to go into a high-level production, whether that be vertical or high-tech greenhouse. The day and age of students wanting to just always go work in nurseries and landscaping, those days are just, you know, not like they used to be.
I appreciate you taking a stab at that question. Learning that you and Michelle share economics degrees, I'm going to just be a fly on the wall. Michelle, I'm sure you have a couple of questions.
Well, I think you started to touch on it with the microgreens. You're in charge of the Southeast region, and you've talked a lot about growth. I guess I'm curious, what's causing the growth and the optimism in the Southeast region?
So if we go way all the way back to 2020, we had the COVID pandemic. And I'm sure if I'm making the right assumption, I was already working remote at the time, but I noticed that some of the local produce, it wasn't on the shelves like I'd liked. I think simplistically, consumers want to know where this stuff's coming from. You can get anything you want now from the internet, whether it be right or wrong or factual or not factual. But, you know, people are just naturally becoming more educated. You know, before I got into CEA, I had no idea about, you know, organic and what that meant. And in many cases, how do growers test for heavy metals and how do those get into the, you know, the food supply chain and, you know, what's really going on, I feel. You know, many folks don't even realize, you know, where their food comes from. And so I think with, you know, population growth, I think when you have a lot of major land grant universities, such as the ones I had mentioned, that are putting CEA on their docket to as a strategic initiative. And then we're also just seeing, you know, culturally, let's say a bit of a renaissance and, hey, support your local farmer. Support, you know, for example, Alabama has, you know, Sweet Grown Alabama. South Carolina has SC certified. Georgia has,
you know, there's a place for everyone. I think that's sort of the angle I push with Peter when we bring in, you know, people like yourself, companies like yourself that are not always the size and scale we're generally talking about, is that there is a lot of innovation there and there is a lot of need and people get excited. And I know that, you know, it's hard when it's not your size or your fit, but I think that these conversations help people think creatively about what is possible. You know, Peter mentioned earlier that when he's talking to people, he's talking about keeping your greenhouse within a degree. And that might be a new concept and, you know, getting that technology and getting that automation in. But to see the whole scale of like a degree is one way to look at it. But now we're talking about a tenth of a degree. And how does that science push and how does that mindset? And I think that spectrum really shows through and makes a powerful point. And so I appreciate sort of the scale. And to me, you know, you're talking about local. Another point that Peter and I've had a lot is, you know, what could local be? And we've talked about 3 or 5% would be a huge increase. And so, you know, if you're looking at a quarter of an acre greenhouse, how much of an impact are you having on local production? And maybe some, but like, if you're talking about the size and scale that you're working with, moving into new regions, and that is coming from a demand for local, I think that begins to change the conversation about what local is and how important it is to people.
No, I agree with you. And something I think about with, you know, CEA and adding value to traditional ag is, you know, for example, back in 2017, one of our executive business developers, Jan Vestra, who I work very closely with in our market, there was a research paper put together for South Carolina and how it can go and compete. One of it being is, one of the points being smaller CEA operations for propagation and genetics that then could be put into the fields. You continue to see heavy development, heavy pounding of wetlands, but water still wants to go to these areas regardless of how you, you know, grade it. So there's got to be, I would say, a push to, let's say, redefine our relationship between ag and water. for CEA, a major focus for even smaller farmers is water reclamation. We like to emphasize, you know, when an operator uses Priva, they're working with our knowledge, but they're also working with the idea of, hey, water is a finite resource. How do we best be stewards of that resource, right? So we want to be able to recapture water, filter it through, you know, UV disinfectant, which is what we like to use. But most importantly, we're recirculating and we're creating, as everybody in here knows, but folks on the outside may not know, a closed loop system.
So it sounds like that your big trends that you're looking at are, that you've mentioned so far, are local food and water use and resource use, as well as scale and trade. Are there any other big trends that you're looking at following that we could share your insights, since we didn't get the chance to see you in Savannah last week?
AI and automation, right? Those are the major ones that, you know, Priva, as a global leader, we have to continuously, you know, improve upon and commit resources to R&D. We're looking at autonomous growing, right? More focus on irrigation, right? How do we create a stronger root system? How do we create stronger nutrient uptake? How do we get more yields out of a crop, right? That's the goal of CEA, is to have perennialize every single crop that we possibly can. Because instead of having two harvests in the summer and the fall for strawberries, we might be able to get five. As we're doing that, let's call it the vanguard, we have R&D sites now studying corn, now studying, you know, other crops, you know, such as maybe squash or mango, or we don't know, but these are all ongoing research activities. And so we have that for us at Priva and our growers. It's coming out, and we're excited, especially with our partnerships and autonomous growing.
Awesome. Thank you. And are there any other final thoughts you have? And please tell us how our listeners can get in touch with you.
As I get tremendously excited and happy when I'm in a greenhouse, because you get to see bumblebees fly, you get to see green, you get to see good, you get to see things growing. I thoroughly enjoy just being able to talk about, you know, growing crops and the excitement about it. And on top of it, you know, I'm blessed to have a lot of great partners in this industry that I learned from. For folks looking for, you know, ideas and looking to, most importantly, just have conversations, I'm available on LinkedIn. My email is andrew.brooks@priva.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Grower and The Economist. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate it wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps us get discovered by new listeners. If you have questions, concerns, or would like to suggest a podcast topic, please email me at michelle@strategerm.com. I love hearing from you. Until next time.